T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
It's that time of night, you can't stay uptight. So come and join the people and I'm feeling all right. Here on Overnight America. Overnight America.
Yes, last hour of the show for tonight, and we've had a nice Sunday show. Hey, how about this? I'm getting messages on Facebook. Great caller interaction. I never know on Sundays what to expect. Sometimes I go into the show and I think, oh, man, I'm the only one here. I'm the only one that's out there. But today, you have just proved that every Sunday you are listening to the show. I posted the article regarding that couple that stood outside their home with the guns in the Central West End. If you want to go and get in on that discussion, go to Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook. I did get a text message, though. Let me see if I can read it again. Your comment section tonight is being shadow banned by Facebook. Comments cut off within minutes. You are no longer listed on my liked pages either. If you are on Facebook, maybe you can go tell me if anything looks weird or funny. If you can go like the Facebook page and tell me if it works, that'd be nice, too, if you haven't already. And no, this is just not a trick to get you to like my Facebook page. That is a bonus. That's almost like it's a nice auxiliary bonus to all of this. So I don't know if you saw this. USA Today reported it. Pretty much everyone else did. President Donald Trump signed an executive order that will overhaul the government's hiring practices so that job applicants' skill will be given priority over a college degree. Wait a minute. So you're saying skill is more important than a piece of paper? This is what's interesting to me, because there's a lot of industries that require skill. Radio is one of them. And you're thinking to yourself, then why did they hire you? No, I look at radio in general and notice that sometimes you can find people that have a college education but no radio experience that are very good radio show hosts. You might find some people that have no college education and are just naturally gifted at communicating, and they find their ways and they find different things that work for them. That's important. Any other jobs like that? I think about me in general. I have a college education, and I went to school and put a priority on broadcast. And when I was going to school, this is what the people that I respected in the radio industry told me about college. They said, college is at least what gets you a consideration. As in, if they have a full list of people, and you could be talented, but there could be other people talented, they may look at that and say, you have a well-rounded education, you graduated college, that says something, that means something, so you'll probably get a consideration over someone that didn't go to college. Now, keep in mind, not everyone's that way. It at least gives you some sort of authority that you have some sort of understanding of the world, you have some understanding of things other than just what's on social media. Now, I think things have changed some. Things have changed a little bit over the years. I think about people that have gone to college and people have overpaid college. The cost of college has gone through the roof. I mean, just way through the roof. And you wonder, is it really worth it anymore? I look at the way some of these universities charge and think, if I were hiring, even though I'm not in that position to do so, but if I were hiring, would there be any difference between someone that went to Mizzou or someone that went to a community college? Would there be any difference than someone that went to Yale versus someone that goes to UMSL? And this is my way of thinking. Probably not. And I would look at whoever I got the better feel for. You know, who did I talk to? Who did I connect well with? Who did I think would be the best person for the job? So this is not a bad step. And I don't exactly know what the hiring process is like on the federal level. If a person's education level would automatically disqualify them from certain jobs, and if that was leaving us in a real problem in the future because there's just not enough people wanting to go work in public service or whatever the job may be. This is good. I think this opens some things up. I think that there's a lot of people that can prove not only they can do the job, but they can do it effectively, and they're good people. And I think you can tell those people. I think you really can. Just having a college degree doesn't necessarily mean you're the best person for the job. And that's always been the case. And in some cases, I think you can even make a pretty strong argument. Hey, I didn't go to college. Instead, I did an apprenticeship here. I got hands-on work over here. I worked in the family business over here. I know the industry. I didn't go to college, but I know the industry better than anyone else. That's the type of people you should be looking for. So coming up next, we're going to replay a portion of an interview with author Philip Goodrich. I think you'll enjoy it. He's the author of Somerset. It's a book about the lawsuit Somerset versus Stewart. It will give you an idea of what that's about. Little known truths of what sparked American Revolution on Overnight America KMOX. There was a case, Somerset versus Stewart. The book is called Somerset, which is out today. You can go find it online if you want to get it on your Kindle or device, or maybe look it up wherever you find your books. Look up Somerset, S-O-M-E-R-S-E-T-T, and author Philip Goodrich joins us this hour. Hey, thank you again for sticking around.
Sure.
You know, I do
I'm
want to talk about
it too.
Well, you put a lot of work into this. It's fun to be able to enjoy it with other people, I'm sure. But I do want to get to the Ben Franklin side of this in a little bit, because
sure.
If you were to just come up with like a character in a book that did all the things Ben Franklin did, you'd say that's no way possible this person could have been a real life human being, because it's unbelievable all the things Ben Franklin is a part of. It's almost just strange to think just how important he is to American history. But I wanted to go back to this case. So to kind of rewind, there was this case where out of Boston, it was a customs agent where he yep. had a slave, but this is back in 1772, where still this is a British territory, and the customs agent had a slave for 20 years. The slave escaped, went over to England. They tried to recover, and the person who is Somerset, the customs agent is Stewart or Somerset. I'm sorry,
yes.
I'm getting them mixed up.
The customs agent is Stewart.
Stewart tries to say, well, I want to sell the slave to another territory. Well, this is where England steps in and says, our territories and how we handle this is different than how we do it inland. So it became into a legal battle, and that's where we are now. So Somerset versus Stewart, what exactly happened there, and what were the two sides arguing?
Well, essentially, the question that was brought to the Lord Chief Justice of the Court of King's Bench was, is it legal for a slave owner to direct the sale, essentially to direct the deportation of a slave for sale in another land? Mm-hmm. And
this is a big thing, because, of course, being from Boston, it's a little bit different than actually living in England or London at the time. So that adds a little extra bit to it, too.
It does. And at the same time, Stewart was asserting his right of ownership of Somerset to do whatever he wanted with him. And the London courts were saying, not so fast. Ultimately, it becomes the case of the century in a way, because we have five attorneys working on Somerset's side, and two attorneys working on Stewart's side, and the Lord Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, essentially that equivalent in London, hearing the case with two other judges at his side, and he drags this out for a full 8 months before he makes a final decision, which was unusual in the 18th century. You know, they had cases that would be decided in 15 minutes.
So what happens to, Somerset at a time like this? Because in today's modern history, we think about there's bail or maybe they're being held for a decision or something. What happens to Somerset during this time?
He's been bailed out, and he is actually living under the protectorship of one of the abolitionists of London, Anglican named Granville Sharp. And Granville Sharp has been working on trying to find a case where he could force the manumission of a slave. He'd been working on this for 4 years behind the scenes with this Chief Justice because they were both trying to find a case where they could free an American slave. And they felt that they finally had it here. And three different times the judge begs Stewart and the planters of the West Indies to just deal with this on your own and let this man go because you're not going to like this decision if you take this to a decision. And they dug their heels in and said, no, we want a decision from the Supreme Court. And Mansfield finally said, all right, the decision is this man goes free.
Wow. And they basically didn't want to set a precedent. The judge or the court didn't want to at that point. Yeah, so they were forced to in a way. So it gets to that point. What did that mean socially speaking in London? Did it seem like a victory like that led the way to how slavery was looked at as the society?
Initially, many people that were slave owners in London and its environs did go ahead and immediately release their slaves. They thought that's what it meant, and they were sort of interpreting it on their own. The Lord Chief Justice, after the fact, said, no, this was just for this one slave, and kind of walked back his decision for the ensuing 10 years. But the cat was already out of the bag. The bottom line, though, was that Benjamin Franklin, of course, was living in London at this time, and he seized onto this case and immediately sent letters out to certain plantation owners in Virginia, such as George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, James Monroe, the entire Lee family, the entire Randolph family, and said, listen, if you guys stay in the empire, you're going to lose your slaves. And all of a sudden, we've got a committee of correspondence being formed in Virginia for the first time in the winter of 1772 and 1773 after they get these letters from Franklin. And now they're saying, we're really anxious to revolt from the British government. Virginia had never been anxious to revolt from the British government. They had a good relationship with the British government. They were mostly Tories. They were, you know, had a very brisk and wealthy trade going with Great Britain. And now all of a sudden, they want out of the empire.
You know, what's interesting about this is because when we learn about this in school, a lot of it has to do with the taxation and the relationship between the two wanting to be independent, self-governing. And I wonder what you're talking about here. What do you think, if you were to put a percentage on the motivation to separate from England, would this be a significant percentage, you believe? Or do you think this is just one of the contributing factors that it's hard to tell how much of this had a factor?
For the colonies from Maryland on south, this was probably the primary factor. For the colonies from Pennsylvania on north, the Hutchinson letters and the reaction to the Boston Boston Tea Party was the primary factor.
Right.
So,
and that's where these Hutchinson letters come into play.
I'm sorry?
And that's these Hutchinson letters. This is where you get a lot of this information.
Yes. Well, the Hutchinson letters, like I said, that triggered the Boston Tea Party because the assumption by the Sons of Liberty in Boston was that the Hutchinson letters were the reason that the British were present at the Boston Massacre and were there and started shooting people. So if that's true, then they were reacting against the British government because they were still quartering soldiers there and they wanted them out.
Right.
But ultimately, then, it's not so much the Boston Massacre. I'm sorry, here we go, the Boston Tea Party. It's the reaction to the Boston Tea Party. And, again, that's something that the American public needs to keep in mind. What was the reaction to the Boston Tea Party? And the reaction to the Boston Tea Party was the Intolerable Acts.
I want
to... Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. We got a little bit of a weird lag delay. I'm sorry.
It's okay. They were the acts from the British government that essentially closed the harbor of Boston and shut down all their commerce and said that they were not going to open their commerce until all the tea had been paid for. And essentially they started starving out Massachusetts.
You look at these chain reactions of things that went down. So I want to go back to Ben Franklin living in London at this time and writing these letters. Do we have those letters, those documents? Have they been preserved, or how did you find out about those letters to begin with?
We do not. All we know is that Benjamin Franklin was using some communication method to keep stirring up the plantation owners, the slaveholders of the American South. And the mechanism, you know, Franklin was commonly corresponding with burn this, destroy this, you know, for your eyes only, and much of his correspondence of that time frame is gone.
Mission Impossible style, or what's the go-go gadget arm guy, so this message will self-destruct as soon as you toss it to the side.
You know what? But the recipients actually had to destroy it in the 18th century.
Well, I wanted to talk to you a little bit more about Ben Franklin. And do you mind doing that after the break?
Absolutely. Don't mind at all.
So this is what I was going to ask you, maybe, and to our listeners. I'm curious because Ben Franklin was such a interesting guy, such a smart guy, too. I wanted to ask our guest, author Philip Goodrich, if maybe he thinks that this was a manipulation tactic. So trying to break away, trying to be its own country, Ben Franklin, a big part of drafting the documents and being there as part of American history. I'm wondering if this was something that was a tool, a manipulation tool, in order to get us a little bit closer to that. And that's what I want to talk to Philip Goodrich about coming up next. You can look his book up now. It's called Somerset, S-O-M-E-R-S-E-T-T. And it's out today electronically. You can get it right now if you wanted to. What a real fascinating part of American history. I'm guessing you had no idea any of this happened. So we're going to learn a little bit more coming up next on Overnight America KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. I'm Ryan Recker, and we're with author Philip Goodrich. He released the book called Somerset. He's a Missouri guy. It's a book about the little-known but true facts that sparked the American Revolution, a conversation we had earlier this week that I enjoyed so much, I thought anyone that missed it would enjoy hearing it again tonight. I wanted to ask you a little bit about Benjamin Franklin, because before we got into the break, you talked about some of the letters that he wrote in to some of the leaders back here in the United States, the Washingtons, the Madisons, the Jeffersons of the world. And I'm wondering, do you think Benjamin Franklin, he was a smart guy, very wise, he knew how to manipulate things. Do you think he was directly or maybe indirectly trying to spark the American Revolution?
He was directly. The first part of the first half of the book goes into the whole why of why would Benjamin Franklin do this? Benjamin Franklin absolutely loved Philadelphia. He wasn't from Philadelphia, he was from Boston. But Philadelphia was his adopted home. They were the ones that had taken him in when he was essentially a fugitive apprentice. He wanted Pennsylvania to succeed. He wanted Philadelphia to succeed. They were both being threatened during King George's War by the French and by the indigenous people all around them. And he asked the Penn family, William Penn's children, who were now adults and were the proprietors of Pennsylvania, to please provide defense because otherwise they were going to get killed. And the Penn family pretty much told Franklin to forget it and to quit worrying about it and to grow up. Franklin was furious over this. Franklin took it upon himself to raise a militia to defend Pennsylvania. And the Penn family responded by wanting to charge him for treason against the Penn family and the Crown for raising a militia in Pennsylvania. So he was even more furious after that and traveled to London to try to convince Parliament and the Crown to take Pennsylvania away from the Penn family. Mm-hmm. And they all said, we love the Penn family. They give us money. They're kind to us. They, you know, they behave well in London. We're not going to take this land away from them. You know, and they pretty much told Franklin to go home as well. And as you've indicated, Franklin, he was a genius. He was a political master. He knew everything he was doing. And all authorities agree that there was only one man that Benjamin Franklin ever hated in his entire life, and that man was Thomas Penn. And so he would do anything to get Pennsylvania away from the Penn family. Unfortunately, his assistants and advisors in London told him, there's no way you can pull Pennsylvania out of the empire. You know, there's no precedent for taking a single colony and making them into a separate entity. They said, if you're going to pull Pennsylvania out of this, you're going to have to take 12 colonies out with you.
So he said, challenge accepted.
He said, challenge accepted. And so it was like, okay, I've got six colonies north of me and six colonies south of me. How do I get them into this? The southern colonies, I can get into it if I can get one slave set free. The northern colonies, I can get into this if I can get them angry over the British soldiers again. His best friend in London is a man named Thomas Pownall, who at one time was governor of Massachusetts, lieutenant governor of New Jersey, governor of South Carolina, and had turned down being governor of Pennsylvania. He was one of the most preeminent people in the United States before they were the United States, and he is totally forgotten by history.
Wow.
But he's the one that stole the Hutchinson letters and handed them to Franklin to leak to the press.
And Franklin, part of the press, too. I mean, he was also printing and doing all of this.
Oh, Franklin had great contacts both in London and in Boston. He knew exactly what he was doing.
Do you know what Franklin's personal views on slavery were? Do we know what he thought about it?
It's complicated. Franklin himself was a slave owner. He owned between four and six slaves during his life. Franklin was a printer by trade. If you went to the colonies in 1750, as far north as Boston, in the, every print shop, you would see a black African slave that was actually pumping the presses. You know, if you had a circulation of 5,000 newspapers, that meant 5,000 pumps of the press every day. That was hard work. And so Franklin was a slave owner. But at the same time, he needed financial help for his revolution, and the only people that were in a position to help him financially were, of all people, the London Quakers. The London Quakers were, every last one of them was a millionaire, every one of them. They were probably the wealthiest people outside of the nobility in London at the time. And Franklin, being from Pennsylvania, knew all the Quakers of Pennsylvania and had contact with the London Quakers. So he solicits financial help from them, and of course the London Quakers were the abolitionists. And so they told Franklin, okay, listen, we are going to help you with this, but you are going to help us with abolition once we get your colonies free.
Interesting.
So at the very end of Franklin's life, suddenly when he gets back to the American colonies, he becomes a staunch abolitionist. Simply to fulfill his promise to the London abolitionists.
Isn't that something? So he uses the, hey, the South, this is what could happen if you don't get on board. And then ultimately, once the wheels get in motion, he becomes, frankly, basically looks at what he said on the South and goes in the complete opposite direction when it comes to his own personal life.
Sure. And even the American colonies, the northern colonies were actually passing laws abolishing slavery during the American Revolution, while the southern colonies were fighting to preserve it.
Isn't that something?
And the only person that can hold all this together is Benjamin Franklin.
Yeah. What a interesting part of history that no one knows about. I mean, honestly, do they teach this in any class? I don't know anyone that
no
I've
one knows
ever
this
spoke
story.
To.
No yeah. one knows this story, and 250 years later, it's high time the American public knew this story.
So what do you think the takeaway of this story should be, the grand conclusion and the things that are stand out the most to you?
Well, there are several. First of all, I think that it's important that people understand the great contribution that Benjamin Franklin made in terms of freedom for America. At the same time, I think it's important that people now realize that, indeed, we did have institutional slavery for 240 years from 1619 until the Civil War. And institutional slavery was the law of the land. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a staggering number when you think about it. 240 years of sanctioned slavery in the United States. So, you know, these are serious issues that require some serious contemplation. I'm gonna do some self-advertising here, but I just had an editorial drop in Time Magazine 2 days ago, and it's online on the June 22nd issue of Time Magazine about this very issue, about how many wars did we actually fight to preserve slavery.
In Time
and
Magazine.
We've actually,
oh, go ahead.
I'm sorry, and we've actually fought at least two, at least the American Revolution and the Civil War were fought to preserve slavery.
Yeah, and you don't think of the Revolution as being directly connected that way, because this part is just forgotten. And the other part of it is that we're doing ourselves a disservice by not learning these things, to not learn the history of America, because ultimately it's better for us to be knowledgeable of our past.
We absolutely need to know this. That's why we need to know this story.
It's an interesting story. Do we know what happened to Somerset after that case?
We only know for about 2 months, and then he's lost to history, and he's lost throughout the rest of his life. Presumably, he stayed in London. There was a relatively large black community, and there would have been no reason for him to leave after that. And, in fact, he probably would have feared if he'd left, he might have been sold back into slavery.
Wow,
so he very likely lived out his life in London, but we lose track of him after August. He'd been freed 2 months previously, and by August of 1772, he's gone.
What about Stuart? Do we know what happened to that customs agent?
Stuart ended up living out his life in London. He wasn't vilified by anybody. He lived a relatively comfortable life. He had been one of the biggest tax collectors in the colonies, and was reasonably comfortable, but lived out his life and died shortly after the American Revolution.
You know, I'm wondering, in the history of Ben Franklin, so you talk about all of the moving parts and how he was directly moving America towards revolution. He kind of used that case in order to get the South on board, but later in his life became an abolitionist. I'm wondering if he ever took that on in order to try to make that a bigger issue in America, as opposed to just the northern states taking it on, if he ever tried to get the South on board as well.
He tried to get everybody on board, but he was literally at the end of his life. You know, the smoke really hadn't cleared as far as the American Revolution until 1783. He comes back to the United States in 1787 against his own better judgment. He gets drafted to help write the Constitution. People want to make him the first president, and he says, "No, George Washington is your president. I can't do this." But the very last thing he ever writes is an op-ed in the press attacking American slavery.
So it was
2 months before he died, and but it was his last statement in the American press was just an outright attack on slavery.
Wow. If he would have lived longer, imagine how American history could have changed at that moment, honestly.
Because the other guy that was in his corner was Thomas Paine. And Thomas Paine was a staunch abolitionist, and he was angry that right after the American Revolution, I think all the Quakers thought, okay, now they're going to sit down and they're going to figure out how to free all the slaves. And in our own Constitution, it's there. It says by 1808, we will have worked this all out. It's right there in the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah.
Well, how'd that work out?
Not exactly. But it's you think about how history could have been different, and if anyone could have got it done, it would have been Ben Franklin. And
absolutely.
Just what an interesting part of history. Do you mind holding on one more segment?
I don't mind at all.
And Philip Goodrich is joining us, author of Somerset, S-O-M-E-R-S-E-T-T. I'm going to talk to him just for a couple more minutes, and I got to say, this is just an amazing part of American history that I'm guessing you, as the listener here right now, had no idea all of this happened. It's Overnight America, KMOX. To Overnight America, I'm Ryan Recker, and we're with author Philip Goodrich. He released the book called Somerset. He's a Missouri guy. It's a book about the little-known but true facts that sparked the American Revolution, a conversation we had earlier this week. And by the way, Philip, where can people find Somerset?
I can be found at philgoodrichauthor, all lowercase, .com. And I'm on Facebook at philgoodrichauthor, three words.
Cool.
And then my author page is on Amazon. Yeah.
Yeah, and people can look up your book, Somerset, S-O-M-E-R-S-E-T-T, Somerset. And I'm wondering for the listener, the reader, the one that would pick this up, what are you hoping they take away from Somerset?
I think they're going to get a whole new appreciation for Benjamin Franklin, for his brilliance, for the fact that he wasn't just this semi-awake grandfather going to a bunch of meetings during the Declaration of Independence and during the Constitution. There were five great documents of the American Revolutionary period. There is one man on the entire planet that signed all five of them, and that man's name is Benjamin Franklin. I can't overstate, just as you've indicated, I cannot overstate the impact that this man made in the formation of our country.
Yeah, you know that movie in the 90s, Forrest Gump? People watch that and they say, wow, wouldn't that be amazing if a person like that actually existed and was able to do all of these things interweaving into American history? And we can go back and say, yeah, well, there was a guy by the name of Benjamin Franklin that probably did that times 10. It's just so remarkable that even that type of human being could have existed on this planet and was able to accomplish everything he accomplished.
Yes, there is not one key event of the Revolution that does not have Franklin's hand on it.
Yeah. He's an interesting guy. I heard some things about him once that when they were drafting the Constitution, he wanted to put a joke into it, and they had to, like, restrain him from doing that, which he had a sense of humor, too.
I wouldn't put that past him for a moment.
I like all of this. So you ever make it back to Missouri?
Oh, well, I'm living on the Kansas City side now. I'm over
great.
In Platte City, just down the road. We're the Me Too little brother of St. Louis.
I see. So you're not too far away. And, yes, not that long. Who knows? Maybe before you know it, we'll have a giant tube that speeds us between the two cities, and it'll make it easy
that
to
would
get
be sweet.
Between it. All right, so you wrote an article for Time, and by the way, if you go to Time Magazine's website and do a quick search for your name, I'm sure the article will come up, Philip Goodrich. And I got to say, I really enjoyed our time together, and this was awesome, and I really hope that your book catches on. I'm sure it will, and I love American history. You've done a great job documenting it here.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for the time.
And he joins us on the TDK Technologies guest line. I did a great job with that. You know, that's just part of our conversation with Philip Goodrich. You can go back and listen to the full thing on the podcast, which would be fine, too. And I am getting messages on Facebook. I had someone message me and say, hey, I think you're being shadow banned. I said, whoa, really? Well, it doesn't look like that's the case. I'm still getting comments on that one post I had on there. So I think maybe there was some weird Facebook thing there. There hasn't been pretty good comment reactions. But then again, on a Sunday night, I'm not used to getting this many reactions to begin with. So I feel like it's above par, and I'll take it. Well, you know, we're getting close to wrapping up for the day. We'll be back again tomorrow after Cardinals baseball. But in the meantime, it's always good to communicate by going to the Ryan Recker Radio Facebook page. I had a lot of things I was going to talk about tonight. And I didn't really get a chance to talk about him all that much because we really went and spoke about the West Central West End and the one incident that happened earlier today during the protest. You can go find those online, the Radio Rewind, or even better yet, you could just go download the podcast at Ryan Recker Radio. I posted a link to it there inside the Facebook page. But one thing I was going to talk about was these weird flashes of light that are colliding with the black hole, and they don't understand quite why. So, as you know, in space, you probably understand that the idea of a black hole so dense that there is nothing that can escape it up to a certain point, the event horizon. So anything past that, nothing. Light can't even escape it. That's a pretty big deal. Why is that a big deal? Well, it's just something that we learn about space. How does it happen, and what happens when you get too close to it? We don't know. However, there is some flashes of light that are coming from black holes, at least when they discovered. And they said, now that shouldn't happen. Maybe we'll talk some more space tomorrow. I love talking space when we have some more time. But in general, this is what I like learning about space. I like learning that there's things that change, as in what we thought one day could change the next. And there's a lot of people that look, stargaze and look up and they wonder what's next when it comes to that sort of thing. So the wonder of it all is always a fun thing for us to talk about. All right, well, have yourself a great night. We'll be back again tomorrow and reach out on Facebook. We'll see you. Good night.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.